Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Hello again, I'm Hugo Monier, and welcome to an hour of sifting through the gut-wrenching landscape of sport and hope and despair, of dreams dashed, of optimism strained. Yes, folks, the rugby's on. We're here to take you through the brilliance of top-level European rugby competition with a sprinkle of Springboks infusion. Of course, continuing the discussion of where England go next after Eddie Jones's departure. And joining me for the ride as usual, welcome back the exemplar of modesty and balanced punditry. Yes, that was a joke. It's Hal Crottenden. Hey. And serenely lording it over us all, Irish rugby fanatic and raconteur, the one and only Andrew Maxwell. Gentlemen, well done. Thank you so much for joining us today. What have you made of the round one of European rugby?
Do you know what I found? I found the biggest thing I've taken from it is make sure you watch the right games. Because I went and watched Leinster smashing Racing, which was really depressing. And I could have watched Sharks beating Quins, which I'd have really enjoyed. So, you've got to choose the right games. I wish I'd seen that Quins game. They nearly came back and still got beaten. That would have warmed my heart. No, I had to watch Leinster being amazing.
Andrew?
Well, I've noticed that it's the summer in South Africa.
Yes.
It's a big difference, yes. Isn't it? Yeah. You know? I mean, I'd say about 10 out of the whatever games it was over the weekend, people were playing inside freezing fog. I have to say, I've never seen Limerick look less lovely. The Munster to lose game is just, they're inside a freezing cloud. And then the next game is back in South Africa. Everybody's like sweating in T-shirts and G-strings.
That's the thing, Andrew. When South Africa were introduced into the Heineken Champions Cup, everyone's like, it's a disgrace. It's not Europe anymore. We've lost our rugby integrity. Tradition goes out the window. A trip to Durban. Oh, it's 35 degrees. Quite nice, though, isn't it? Okay, yeah, I fancy it. You're more than welcome. But they were brilliant this weekend. We've got loads to get on, of course. But let's get the England stuff out of the way first. Because Eddie Jones is gone, we know that. However, he did turn out to coach some kids in West London last week. And it seems that the Leicester Tigers coach, Steve Borthwick, is circling overhead and waiting to land his job that he's been destined to do for the past 2 years. Andrew, let's start with you. Is this an appointment that will perhaps put the fear of God into Andy Farrell? How is it being received over in Ireland at the moment?
Well, I think everybody's a bit baffled. He seems to, like, for the rest of the rugby world, it's always been like, why, even when England win under Eddie Jones, he was just kind of cranky in interviews. But I was listening to you talk about him the other day and go, there's a totally different side to Eddie Jones. He's great at, you know, a grassroots level. I mean, I've never met him, of course, but like, people either really love him or really hate him. There seems to be nothing in between. Like, I mean, you know, James Haskell, who obviously I know from I'm a Celeb, like, he swears blind by Eddie Jones. So, is there, like, just two different Eddie Joneses? Is there a good or evil switch on his back like a doll in The Simpsons?
I don't know. How would you think?
Well, I just think it's like when someone dies and everybody says nice things about them. Don't tell us now about all the coaching kids and being lovely. And he's probably going to be a miniature Santa in hospitals this Christmas or something. You know, it's like he's doing all these lovely things people are talking about he's now doing. Now you say it. Now he's gone. So, yeah, I feel really bad. Let's have him back. It's like when someone dies, isn't it? And everybody says, oh, how brilliant they were. It's like, you know, people only say you were a great player, Hugo, once you're dead. Do you know what I mean? It's when... I'm just saying, it's God. That's quite harsh. But you people tend to only say the nice things once you're finished. So we've done that to Eddie.
That's it. That's why we're so kind about you, Hal.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you're finished, and I've always loved your wit and comedy and your just humble attitude. but how getting back to the England coaches, Steve Borthwick, it feels like he is going to be the next England coach. What do you think of that, and how big a task or a job do you think he's got with the Six Nations looming?
I think everybody's sort of, it is weird, everybody's making that assumption about Steve Borthwick, because it's kind of one great season for Leicester, really. I mean, I know he's done stuff, obviously, with England. He did stuff, you know, with Sarries, but he was, I think he's kind of unproven. I know the cool thing to say is, should get Scott Robertson in, don't we? Everybody's talking about Scott Robertson in New Zealand. For me, that's a bit like when kids are going, yeah, I like the Undertones and Joy Division. They've never really heard their music. I know nothing about Scott Robertson, but that's the cool name to say. It's not going to happen, is it? They're not going to be able to get him in. But I just think Steve Borthwick is a bit unproven. And I don't want to go on another Sarries rant, OK? But what is it? Why does Mark McCall never seem to really come into the conversation? Is it that people think that Sarries just bought all their success and he's not a great coach? Because he won European titles against teams with much bigger budgets. He's an amazing coach, Mark McCall. And I don't want to lose him. I'm just saying, I kind of feel sorry for him. I don't know. They were saying at Sarries yesterday, people saying he never wanted an international job. Really? I don't know whether a coach ever doesn't want an international job. Who really doesn't want to move up from the club game? It's not that I want to see him go. I just think it's sort of disrespectful that Mark McCall never seems to make it big, you know, never seems to be in these conversations. But having said that, Steve Borthwick, fine. But I think he's sort of unproven. And Leicester, there's not that much consistency. Leicester aren't playing brilliantly this season. What, they're fifth in the Premiership? They're not really backing up what they did last season. So I don't know if he is. I just don't know. I think he's unproven.
Yeah.
I think there's two things. I think, personally, I think Eddie Jones's undoing was the insane talent of Marcus Smith. He didn't seem to know what to do with it. And obviously, Marcus Smith is the future of England. And I think that was his undoing. You know, here's an absolute golden egg. You work out how to do it. And he didn't. Smith was always so much better at Queen's than at England. And, you know, that's the testing line. I picked Borthwick. I said, the minute Eddie Jones went, all my rugby friends, I just sent the word Borthwick. I think how he played last season turned Leicester around. It's a very English style of game that he has brought to Leicester. And it's a winning type of England type of play. And my thing is with Borthwick is, I think he'll be able to get the England squad, the England outfit, to play that style of rugby by next year. And I think that's the appeal of him, right? I don't think whatever, like, Mark McCall has won definitely more things than this dude in New Zealand that neither of us have heard of before. But I think they can just go, Borthwick can go, here's the template, play this. And 95% of the England squad will be very happy and very comfortable playing that style of game. That's it.
Yeah,
that's the appeal.
I reckon they could play that style next week.
Yeah.
Because it's fairly basic. It's well-driven. Everyone has clarity. I think there's a few nations in world rugby. Ireland would be one of them. New Zealand would be one. I think Scotland would be one. England, France, you could put them all into it. Winning is really, really important, but almost as equal as how you go about doing it. I don't think New Zealand would be doing cartwheels if they won the World Cup next year by kicking the ball. They just wouldn't. It just wouldn't be accepted. But that may be coming with Steve Borthwick if he is to be the next England coach. And there's been a lot of talk about his coaching team with Steve Borthwick. Well, who will he assemble? Is it going to be another league legend? Kevin Sinfield, who seems to be near the top of the people's wish list, absolutely. Andrew, what is it about Rugby League at the moment? Because whether it's Andy Farrell or Sean Edwards, Rugby League is having a massive impact on Rugby Union.
Yeah, big time. And obviously the same relationship is in Australia as well, between the two codes. I got into watching the league during lockdown, and I was stunned by how good the handling skills are. I mean, no offence to a former Union back, but the handling skills in league are excellent. And, you know, the margins at the top of union these days, particularly the international level, are so tight. You need those skills. You need every possible advantage. I mean, you know, watching the NRL down in Australia, the Australian Rugby League, there's at least one or two sumptuous crossfield kicks that are taken down and flown right into the corner flag a game. And also high balls. You know, there's, you know, the kick tennis that seems to happen at International Union, where you're going, what's this all for? nobody's chasing after it. Everybody's catching the ball successfully. There's no, you know, whereas in league, it's nerve shredding. They put these very high spiral kicks in and put the opposing fullback under incredible pressure. And they get gains from it. These are those little bits that league can bring to Union.
Don't they say that it's because it's just a simpler game, they're better at the basics. They always have been. Tackling, passing, you know, because it's a simpler game, rugby league, that's why they have so, almost more time to be honing those skills. They don't have to be mauling and line outs and, you know, and doing more detailed stuff at the, you know, the scrum is, I don't know, the scrum's a mess. I must admit, I hardly watch league. The big thing that I think rugby league brings to Union in terms of coaches like Sinfield, you know, and Sean Edwards is, let's face it, okay, Northern accents. Northern accents are better for inspiring teams. It is so much better to be in a dressing room having a Northern accent going, come on, boys, get stuck in, front up. You don't want accents like me and Ugo go, oh, I love you, win or lose. You know, it's not got the... So I think the Northern accent is a massive part of what of it's just made Union a better game because we've got these coaches that have got the right accent for the job. So I think it's a controversial point, but an important one that needs to be made.
I'm always stunned by how our Owen Farrell actually talks. He sounds like a sheep rustler. He's stealing somebody's lambs on the high feld.
Okay. Well, Owen Farrell and Andy Farrell both played rugby league as well as rugby union, very successful of it. And there was a two-match Clash of the Code series in 1996 between Bath and Wigan. In the league game at Main Road, Wigan beat Bath 82 points to 6 with Martin Afire, Chariots, scoring 6 tries. In the Union game, Bath won 44-19 in front of a 42,000-person crowd. Do you think we should bring that back? And do you think there's an understanding of people, whilst they're both called rugby, but they are distinctly different games? The only thing that really connects them is the shape of the ball.
Oh, big time. But it's exciting, though. I mean, what's wrong with a spectacle? You know, I'd like to see, you know, when you win the, you know, gold medal in the 100 metres in the Olympics, you should have to race a horse at a county fair afterwards. All of that, like, make sport interesting and fun. Obviously, it's not going to be the best rugby union game or the best rugby league game. The equivalent already exists in Aussie rules, the AFL. Once every 4 years, I think it is, play against Gaelic football, the GAA, and they have what's called the International Rules Tour, where they play three games at a hodgepodge of the two sports squashed together. But it's exciting, you know, and it's also good to see who could play both codes. You know, Sonny Bill Williams, you know, Money Bill. It is just impressive when somebody can play both types of rugby at the top level.
But isn't the fact that they're just better? I mean, I say this as someone who doesn't really watch league. I've got too many... I spend all my time trying to watch every single European game. There's too many of them. Now the South Africans are involved. Anyway, but so I don't really watch league, I must admit. But it does seem to be that they are sort of... They just almost seem to be more developed rugby players because they just are so good at the really important skills.
They're different athletes, Hal. They're different athletes, so... In our game, we will have people over 150 kilograms just because you need to be able to scrum, you need to be able to maul. You don't have those contact elements within league. There's still a heavy degree of it, but those technical bits like scrumming and mauling, it is very much tackling and carrying. So everyone has to be a ball player. The ball and play time is significantly higher in rugby league than in rugby union. So the players have to be from a cardiovascular perspective, a lot fitter. So we're seeing proper rugby athletes who have to catch, pass, carry, and do that so much better because they don't have the strain or the labour of having to scrum or having to maul. And that's probably the defining difference between the two games.
There's also a lot of really high-speed impact as well in league. I mean, their forwards aren't the same size as a Union forward, okay? But they're still pretty big. Like, there's a guy, Campbell Gillard, plays for the Kangaroos, and I think he's with the Eels in Sydney. And he's a big dude, like, and he's hitting you, or he's getting hit at high speed. Like, so I think that both games are fantastic. I would personally love to see either a compromise rules game or a best of three, you know? I don't know.
I must say, it has brought, it's changed the way we look at forwards, though, in Union. I was thinking about was it the Bordeaux forward who scored the first try against Gloucester and flew through like a... Yeah. And just incredibly, really fast, really speedy, really athletic, little chunky guy. And I went, you just wouldn't have seen, you know, that you wouldn't have seen that 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You wouldn't have seen a prop that can run that fast and look that athletic, charging through to score a try. And I think that's probably league's impact, isn't it?
Yeah, totally agree. I, in fact, got offered to play rugby league before I ever had a contract in rugby union. I'm glad that I did that. I have a huge amount of respect for rugby league. Of course, the two are brilliant games that bring back the clash of the codes. Is that what we call it? We'll call it the clash of the codes. Anyway, we'll ponder on that and figure out what title we would call it. But after the break, it's all European rugby after a fantastic weekend of Champions Cup and Challenge Cup.
Join Ellis James and pals down the clubhouse for a light-hearted and entertaining journey through the history of sports forgotten, rarely seen, iconic and hotly debated moments. All episodes available now on the BT Sport app.
Welcome back to the Rugby Zone with my guest Andrew Maxwell and Hal Cruttendon. Well, it was European rugby with a new look this weekend. South African teams were taking part for the first time. Not everyone was thrilled. A certain Antoine Dupont tweeted that it's difficult to grasp, it's no longer the European Cup, but it certainly gave an extra edge to the proceedings with three South African teams joining the fray in the Champions Cup. We haven't got time to go through all the games, so we've just picked out a few standout results to talk about. And because Andrew can get a bit parochial about this sort of thing, we're going to start with perhaps the performance of the weekend by Ireland, Leinster at Racing 92. Andrew, we all start with you. Leinster absolutely flying, and Josh van der Fleer, who was picked as the world's best rugby player, two tries of him, and the worst ever home defeat for Racing 92. Not a bad way to kick off another year's campaign.
Yep, like clockwork, just a machine, just an absolute machine. And Josh van der Fleer, like, again, there's a guy who's, you know, he's a forward, but he moves like a back. He has all the aggression of a forward, but he has the legs, the feet, the poise, the handling skills of a back. He's incredible. People always assume he's South African because of his Dutch name. Not true. His granddad introduced radiators to Ireland.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. I know, yeah. I know. So we owe Josh van der Fleer all the amazing rugby that he shows us in blue and in green.
This is in like the 1960s or something. I mean, how could he not have had radio? It must have been his grandfather.
It was his granddad. His granddad introduced radiators to Ireland. So we owe him a debt of gratitude twice for his rugby skills and keeping us warm in the winter. It's incredible. I mean, you're right, what you said in the introduction. What the secret sauce of both how well Ireland are playing and Leinster are playing is they're the same team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The clockwork, like I was home and I saw Ireland against both Fiji and the Wallabies in the Aviva. And it's mesmerising, the ruck speed. It's the ruck speed. The other teams just have no chance to settle into a rhythm. You know, you look at Finn Russell was completely snuffed out in that game. There was no time for him to find a chance to create any kind of magic. It's just bang, 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 bang. It's mesmerising.
Yeah, it certainly was mesmerising. It was also for Christian Wade, that familiar name for us here in England. He was on the score sheet for Racing 92. But how? Stuart Lancaster, he was obviously part of the Leinster coaching staff. He's going to Racing next year. What do you think he would have made of the game? Bit of work to do.
There is a hell of a lot of work to do. I mean, Racing are like second in the top 14. That was what was so frightening about this Leinster performance, is that Racing aren't a rubbish team. And actually, we were saying about Finn Russell, Andrew. I just think it showed what a great player Finn Russell is. Completely behind a beaten pack, but still created the odd thing. Still didn't look terrible. Still had moments. Everything seemed to come from him. I think he is amazing. For Stuart Lancaster, it'll be nice because it's probably a little bit embarrassing being a coach at Leinster because you've got all the advantages stacked on your side. The players are like brothers. They probably finish each other's sentences. They're only playing with each other. It's too easy. There's too much of an advantage, and he wants a challenge. That's why he's going to Racing, and I don't blame him. It's unfair. I don't want to moan again about the Leinster. It's so unfair. They're basically, they live together. They know. They only play rugby with each other. They just know each other. That's probably why the ruck speed, I suppose, is so fast. They just know where each other are going to be on the field at all times, and it's just unfair. And I hope someone. I think it's going to be another La Rochelle Leinster, because La Rochelle looked great in their game, Northampton, wasn't it?
And La Rochelle looked amazing.
It could be a La Rochelle Leinster final again, and hopefully
again,
La Rochelle.
I would imagine. I would imagine La Rochelle and Leinster are going to be two of the last four. Is that safe to say, boys?
I think so.
It's early. It's early. There'd be after round one, to pick the two teams that were in last year's finals isn't exactly like going out on a limb, gentlemen. Ooh, I reckon two of the favourites this year, the two that played in the final. Yes, yes, you absolutely smashed it, Andrew. Jeez.
Hey, listen, the truth is still the truth.
The truth is still the truth. And I'll tell you else who might be challenging for it, because there was a couple of standout results from the English teams. Exeter with a bonus point win over Cast. How?
But it's Cast. They're not that good, are they? They're quite rubbish. I only saw highlights this game. It looks okay, but let's not get overexcited.
Excited. That's still a good result. A bonus point victory away. They've not been flying in the Gallagher Premiership, but a new stimulus, a couple of weeks off, some of their England boys back. It's still a 5-point win because they've got away fixtures against the Bulls coming up.
That's true.
And that's going to be tough. So desperate for them to be able to take every single point this weekend. Why do you hate Exeter so much?
Because I'm a Saris fan. Of course I hate Exeter. It's part of our culture. Don't ask. God, that's like asking a New Zealander not to do the haka. It's part of our culture that I despise Exeter. So I'm not going to give them any benefit of the doubt. Yeah, well done against a fairly weak Caster team. I am maybe saying that because also Saris didn't play very well this week, but at least we won. We played badly, but it is a good result. Maybe Exeter will do well, but Bulls looked really good, didn't they, against Lyon, and they kind of went to sleep. They went way ahead and then went to sleep. But Bulls are going to be powerful. I do all the moaning about South African teams. I think it's nice to have them in this. I think it's actually I think there were some sparkling tries and there was some brilliant play and they always. It's better than having lots of Welsh teams, as I've said before.
But Hal, I guess you're probably quite used to it because with Saracens over the last 10, 20 years, we've kind of had a South African team in the Gallagher Premiership, haven't we?
Yes. And actually, we're not South African enough anymore. I like more South Africans. I think weirdly, I think it's nice. And it's not just because I like. It's like the Eurovision thing, isn't it? Eurovision, where Australians go and take part in the Eurovision Song Contest. I never thought I'd find a comparison between rugby and the Eurovision Song Contest, but there it is. I think it's nice to have that vision of the outside world coming in and playing in Europe. So I'm a bit pro the South Africans being involved. I like it.
Yeah, they make every competition better. I know it's not Europe. It's very much been referred to as the Heineken Champions Cup. It's not considered a European competition when you have South African teams in it. But the Super Rugby season wasn't as good last year because South Africa weren't in it. The URC became better and they won it because there are two South African teams in the final last year. and I'm sure they'll be challenging this year. They fully buy into it, so we'll see how it goes. But there was also, let's park the South African twin for a little bit, because it was the first Anglo-French game of the weekend, Gloucester against Bordeaux. Absolutely scintillating game. Gloucester, they weren't at their very best, and they came back from being 17-5 down deep into the second half. How last week you picked Gloucester for a top four finish in the Premiership. What about their chance of a run in the Champions Cup?
I don't want to be dissing all the other English teams, but Bordeaux did not turn up fully loaded, did they? So I think Gloucester didn't play very well, but it might be really inspirational to them that they did come back so brilliantly. So it might be more of like an emotion. They didn't play. They shouldn't have been in that much trouble against Bordeaux, because Bordeaux had there was no Jalibert, there was no. My favourite player in rugby, Poirot, who for Bordeaux wasn't playing. So he's always there to play and to solve the murder if it happens during the game. It seems to me Albert Tuasui is the one who comes on and just transformed the game, didn't he? I think he was an amazing player. So I think I think Gloucester are really exciting. As I always say, Gloucester are they're a team I really like, and they're the team that certainly their fans don't deserve, because I don't like their fans. But absolutely, absolutely love it. Nice team to watch. They're potentially very exciting, Gloucester. And Carreras, though, he didn't play as well as he did the week before, but he's very exciting playing at 10. So I think Gloucester are definitely going to be top four. They might have a run in Europe, but I don't think this proves anything. I think Bordeaux turned up a little bit under strength.
Yeah, I don't see Gloucester going very far in Europe.
Full stop, the end.
I do love a charge down. I mean, I absolutely love a charge down. And I like the fact that, you know, Billy 12 Trees looks like at any moment he could leave the pitch and just surf away.
Yeah. I think he plays guitar to them in the dressing room, doesn't he, Billy 12 Trees?
Oh,
he's just got that look of just, yeah, guys, just chill out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he lives by a bonfire.
On Sunday, it saw Saracens pick up a tight bonus point win over Edinburgh. How you were there, of course. They would have been... In fact, I referenced you. I gave you a shout-out on the telly at half-time. My question was, which I can now ask you and get the answer, is I don't think Howe would be very happy with that first half. How were you?
No, I wasn't happy, but also I'm a huge pessimist. So I expected us to have a really bad first half. I really did. I was sitting with my friend who went, "You're always doing this." I went, "No, we've had a month off, a month not playing. There's been shots of Ben Earl and Max Malins in Marrakesh about 2 weeks ago, sort of chilling, because Sarri's just didn't, you know, they didn't have a tough competitive game for a month. And also we've got all the players coming back from being with Eddie Jones at England, so they're depressed. And, you know, sort of feel undermined. And so I think that it was always going to be a nightmare game. And the ref wasn't... Well, I don't know if the ref wasn't on our side. I think Edinburgh did play really well. They did us at the breakdown. Yeah. They were always getting in there, you know, and getting turnovers. So I think it might be a bit of a kick up the bum before the Lyon game, the next game, Sarri's. I think it will be. I think Sarri's... I don't know. I think it was always going to be sticky. And Edinburgh are becoming a bit of a bogey team for us. You know, they beat us last season at home in the Challenge Cup. I think we were just finding our feet. And maybe, I don't want to say, you know, if Mark McCall genuinely doesn't want to be an international coach, maybe he did deliberately say, don't go too hard today, guys. Don't have some stunning win that suddenly throws me back into the equation for England. So maybe he was doing it deliberately. That's what I like to think. But... I wasn't happy. No, I wasn't happy. We should be smashing teams like
that. You weren't happy, but it feels like round one, there's been a number of results like that. But 5 points, Lyon away next week. Happy days. But just quickly, a couple of other results to mention. Harlequins, well, they weren't quite able to mount their usual comeback in Durban as they went down 39-31 to the Sharks. Whilst in the Challenge Cup, Cardiff thrashed Bree 41 points to zip. And the Dragons drew the Lions 31. Oh, that was an absolutely thriller. All sounds very fiery. Now, though, it's time for Who Am I? Simple question. It's a simple question with three clues. Gentlemen, are you ready?
No, I'm never ready to be exposed once again as the rugby fraud that I am.
Okay, well, three clues coming up now. Clue number one. I won the 2006-2007 Heineken Cup, scoring a try in the final. Blue number two, I briefly captained my country and played at three consecutive Rugby World Cup. Last one, I broke my leg versus France in the 2013 Six Nations. Gentlemen, any thoughts as to who this person might be? Can you give me a nationality to start with?
Who won the Heineken Cup in 2007? I'm trying to really...
Did they even sell Heineken then?
They didn't have radiators in Ireland back then.
Yeah. No, not in the 60s.
Okay, what nationality?
England? English?
No.
No. French?
Irish?
No. Irish. Someone said Irish. Oh, okay. Okay, it's an Irish back, okay? I'm going to give you a clue.
Yeah.
I succeeded Matt Dawson at Wasp becoming first choice scrum half. Come on. So we now know his position. It's an Irish back.
Is it Stringer?
No. I will give you another clue. I made my 100th appearance for my final club during the Pro 12 Grand Final in 2014. Who was in the Pro 12 Grand Final 2014? Do you remember?
Irish scrum halves. There must. Why can't I remember any Irish scrum halves?
Okay, I'm going to give you the answer. Gents, we're looking for Owen Reddin.
No. That's not what I thought.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. But anyway, we're going to park that because there were some standout scores over the weekend in the European Games, as we've already seen. And that got us thinking. So we asked a friend of the show, Danny Ward, for a rundown on Try Time.
Hello, I'm Danny Ward. And this week, in my final instalment of videos, all about my knowledge of the laws of rugby, I'll be looking at that most exciting means of scoring, the try. And as ever, I'll be looking to see how we can make it even more spectacular going forwards. So why is it called a try? Well, because it means just that. In the old days, if a team got themselves over the line, then they had the chance to try to get points by converting the kick at goal. A conversion would earn 1 point, and tries were only counted if the scores were level and the teams with more tries would be declared the winner. As we all know nowadays, a try is worth 5 points, but that's not always been the case. Did you know in 2015, a 6-point try was trialled in Welsh semi-pro rugby, and in South Africa in 2016 Varsity Cup, a 9-point try was tested and awarded for a try originating from within your own half. It's vital to ensure that the ball is grounded when scoring a try. This means either holding it and touching it to the ground in goal, or placing hand, arm, or front of body between waist and neck on top of the ball, which is on the ground in goal. So as ever, my suggestion for improvement to the game, Law DW 2022 3.19. Extra points to be awarded for the most flamboyant manner of scoring a try. Back to the studio.
Danny Ward there, as always, absolutely brilliant and quite imaginative. But what do you think about the concept and awarding more points for being flamboyant, Andrew?
Oh, I'm totally in favour of it. I think every try from a back should be a flying try, right? You shouldn't be able to just touch it down. You have to swan dive over the chalk. I also think you should get extra points for blowing kisses at the crowd. There's simply not enough of that, as far as I'm concerned. The longer your hair, if you're bald, fair enough. But if you have hair, the longer you grow it and wear it proudly, like Billy 12 Trees would be a classic example of what I'm talking about, on the pitch, you should get more points for that.
And Hal, you had a suggestion last week of, I think it was along the lines of, not having to ground the ball. It should just be a little bit like NFL, because holding the ball up over the try line, Owen Farrell, brilliant example of that on Sunday against Edinburgh. But you just think just getting it over the line is plenty, right?
Because of what happened, I've completely changed my mind and believe the ball needs to be grounded, because Edinburgh would have won the game if that had been allowed. So I'd like to withdraw that comment totally. No.
Good. Learn from your mistakes and hubris, Hal. One of the best. Hubris. I love it. I think holding up the ball in defence is one of the great skills of rugby. It's incredibly hard to do, and I think it's great. And also, I think it kind of comes from league as well. You know what I mean? It's much bigger in league.
I was being flippant. Now you are saying it's one of the great skills. It isn't. A team, okay, I don't want to say Sarri should have lost. We would have probably come back if they'd won. It is, I honestly believe one day we will get rid of the grounding of the ball because teams work so hard. There was a game last week, was it Bath Quins, wasn't it? I brought it up last week. Bath Quins, yes. There was about three times Bath got over the line and Quins held them up last minute. It might be a skillful thing, but it is, you know, teams have earned that. They've crossed the whitewash. They've done the work and someone gets in underneath at the last minute. It feels wrong. I just feel it's unfair. Is it just me thinking that?
No, it does seem. Yes. You know what? You're too soft. Life's hard. And that's what makes rugby brilliant. It is, you know, it is a physical metaphor for how cruel and exacting existence can be.
Yes. Well said, that man. We're going to park that there because it's time to call yourself a fan. But I have to warn you, this might all feel a little bit like after the Lord's Mayor show and following last week's record-breaking score of 8 out of 5 from Harlequins fan Tom Deacon. How you took an absolute battering last week. So we're going to give you the first bite at this cherry and you're going to go first, okay? I think your first, in fact, your best score on this series has been 4 out of 5. So let's see if you can top that today. Yep. I think you need it, okay? Question number one. Saracens lost the 2013-14 Heineken Cup final to Toulon by 23-6. But how many points did Johnny Wilkinson score? Was it A10? Was it B13? Or was it C18? It's tough, this.
I would have thought it would have been 18, because it would have been... But then that might be a double bluff, because he would have had... I would go... 18.
Oh, okay. Don't go with your gut.
Oh.
It's B13. Oh. You literally just went, I would have thought 18, but I think it's a double bluff. I was like, go with your gut. Oh. Try to lead you. It's highly unlikely it was going to be 10.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, but there we are. Wilkinson scored 2 conversions, 2 penalties, and of course, a drop goal. That famous scenes of Owen Farrell trying to charge him down, which was really nice. Anyway,
He did used to outplay Owen Farrell. That's the last time Owen Farrell's outplayed, didn't he? He seemed to always be that Johnny Wilkinson kind of schooled him whenever they played him. Anyway, horrible. Nasty memories.
Yeah. I know, poor guy. Saracens beat Munster 26-10 in the semi-final of 2016-17 Champions Cup. But who scored the first try of the game? Was it A, CJ Stander? Was it B, Chris Ashton? Or was it C, Mako Vunipola?
Who scored the first? I'm really guessing here. Mako Vunipola.
Correct. Oh, in the 54th minute, it was the first try of the game.
Yeah,
that was guts.
I had a feeling that was the one, yeah.
Yes, you take that feeling and you spit out the right answers. Perfect. Okay, question number 3. Which of these teams was not in Saracen's pool in the 2010-11 Heineken Cup? A, Kast, B, Racing, or C, Clermont?
There's too many years of success and being... there's too many years to remember. Kast. Oh, no, not Kast. No, because I think Racing.
How sorry. The answer's actually A, it's Kast, because it was Racing and Clermont.
Oh, that's what I said first.
Okay, so the answer is A, it's Kast, because Racing and Clermont alongside Leinster made up Saracen's tough group, and it was a brutal group. Saracens finished bottom, winning just one game. Okay, how you kind of need this one. You're 1 out of 3 at the moment. Who won the first edition of the Champions Cup, not the Heineken Cup? Was it A, Toulon, B, Saracens, or C, Leinster? Remember, it was always the Heineken Cup.
Yeah.
And then it became the Champions Cup
think...
with the title sponsor Heineken.
I don't know. I think Toulon...
Is that your answer?
Yes.
Yes, you'd be right. Yes. It was Toulon. They beat Clermont 24-18 at Twickenham in the first Champions Cup final 2014, 2015 season. Okay, this feeling a little bit more respectful, but you do need this one, really. 3 out of 5 is par for the course, I think. So with that, here's your final question. Which of these nations has hosted the final of just one Champions or Heineken Cup? Is it A, Scotland? Is it B, Spain? Or is it C, Ireland?
I have a very strong feeling it's Scotland.
And your feeling would be incorrect, because the answer's actually Spain. It was the 2017-2018 Champions Cup final was held at the Saint.
But that was too obvious. That was too obvious an answer was Spain. That was too, it must have been. Okay.
I hate going for the obvious, easy answer, because that final was held at the San Mamés Stadium, which is the home of Athletic Bilbao. So Hal, you scored 2 out of 5. Terrible. Spanking last week. Underwhelming this week. Anyway, Andrew, I hope you're ready for this. Question number 1. Who scored the first points of the 2011-2012 Heineken Cup final between Leinster and Ulster? Was it A, Ruan Pienaar? Was it B, Johnny Sexton? Or was it C, Sean O'Brien?
Pienaar!
Correct. Pienaar, 7th minute penalty, put Ulster in front. However, Leinster did go on to win 42-14. No workings, just answers and correct one,
guess.
Two.
It was a guess. Anyway, carry on.
Who cares? He's 1 from 1. Brilliant. Number 2. Leinster won their first Heineken Cup in the 2008-2009 season. But who did they beat in the quarterfinal? Was it A, Munster? Was it B, Leicester? Or was it C, Harlequins?
Leicester.
Incorrect. Leinster beat Harlequins an underwhelming 6-5 at the Stoop of the infamous Bloodgate game.
It was a brilliant game.
It was a brilliant game. Brilliant game. Loads of line breaks, but not many tries. Only the one try in the whole game. Anyway, who beat Leinster in the semi-final of the 2005-06 Heineken Cup? Was it A, Munster, B, Wasps, or C, Toulouse?
Toulouse.
Incorrect. It was Munster. Munster beat Leinster 30-6 at Lansdowne Road. Okay, you're 1 from 3. Howe was in a similar place to this. And, you know, he didn't turn it round. He was just 2 from 5 in the end. But anyhow, which city hosted the first two Heineken Cup finals? Was it A, Cardiff, B, Paris, or C, London?
Paris.
Incorrect. The first two finals were held at the Cardiff Arms Park, with Toulouse and Brive winning the titles. Right, you need this to draw, and no one likes to draw, so it's, you just need this just for a bit of self-respect. Which of these players has scored more Heineken Champions Cup points? A, Lee Halfpenny, B, Morgan Parra, or C, Toby Flood? Top point scorer out of those three kings. Lee Halfpenny, Morgan Parra, Toby Flood.
Morgan Parra.
Correct. He has scored 569 points in the Champions Cup. Gentlemen, that felt a lot longer than what it actually was.
It did.
It was massively underwhelming. And at the end of that quiz, we've got a draw. 2-2. Nothing to be celebrated, but
no.
let's just move on and look ahead to the next round of the European matches. So we've got another massive weekend of European rugby coming up, live and exclusive here, of course, on BT Sports. And it starts on Friday night with an absolute cracker for Gloucester. They're away to Leinster. That is going to be huge. Gents, is this lambs to the slaughter? Because Gloucester are going to have to be significantly better than they were against Bordeaux at the weekend, right?
Yes. There is going to be a gap in the points between the two of them that would be usually the same amount of points in most games. I am saying that Leinster are going to score at least 30 points more.
But I think there's a chance. I'd love to see I don't know if Gloucester will send an understrength team expecting to lose, because it seems like people are doing that. And I hope they don't, because I think Leinster won so well. The good thing about Leinster playing so well is that maybe there might be a sort of take it for granted you know, this is going to be we're at home. It's going to be much easier than playing wrestling away. But
it doesn't matter. It's if Johnny Sexton, whether he's playing or he's just lurking around the stadium, frightens all the other players. They're half his age. He's 38. He's a middle-aged man shouting at teenage boys. Yeah. They terrified of him. You know, that makes such a difference in a rugby game to have such a level of leadership. I don't see Jerry and White's getting anywhere near.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be pretty tough. And Saturday's games include Exeter at home to Ball, Saris at Lyon, London Irish at Stormers, and Leicester hosting Clermont Auvergne. But Sunday, well, that's pretty good as well. Harlequins at home to Racing. I'll be covering that one. And that's a must win for Quins. While Sale, they're at Toulouse. Gentlemen, what's the one game you have to tune in to watch this weekend? Hal, start with you.
I don't know. I've really got to... if Quins are playing Racing at the Stoop, it would be so beautiful if Racing responded to that slaughter by coming back and smashing Quins at the Stoop. That would be a real... I think they might do. I think Racing are good enough to really go and just do a job and really dig deep and do it in front of that Stoop crowd, right in their faces. I want to see them triumph at the Stoop and then drink the bars clear of alcohol and just lay waste to the whole place, marching out as Quins know that Europe is over for them. That's the game I'll be watching.
Andrew?
Right. Well, I was going to say Quins Racing for, you know, the battle of the entertainers, Marcus Smith against Finn Russell. But like, hey, let's go with his crazy version of what rugby is. Weird medieval bloodbath. The other one that I'd like to say is Irish against Stormers. I just purely because I've brought the conversation around to hair on the pitch a couple of times. But there is a sensational 15 at Stormers who has managed. I'm going to absolutely screw up his name. His name's Clayton Blometcheese, South African name, right? Probably get his name wrong. But he has managed to have a mullet and dreadlocks at the same time. If you like rugby hairstyles, Clayton Blometcheese is the man to watch this weekend. But as a neutral, I would say Quins Racing.
Okay, fair enough. Well, gentlemen, it's been lovely to have your company. And that's all we've got time for this week. So don't forget to tune in over the weekend for another round of Champions and Challenge Cup rugby. Also, check us out and give us a follow on social media. Gentlemen, many thanks once again. Hal Cruttendon, Andrew Maxwell and Danny Ward. And we'll see you after Christmas. Take care.